do that. Hey, welcome to the Molloy Show tonight. It is our annual Halloween program, a Halloween show, which doesn't mean a whole lot except we will have freaky music for you. Thanks for tuning in. In the for the ancient Celts, of course, from about 2,000 years ago, prior to 2,000 years ago, Halloween was a night of great significance. It really was. It occurred at the end of the harvest season. Days are getting shorter, nights getting colder. And as this new season approached, the Celts believed the barrier between the living and the dead grew thin, and they also believed that the border was at its most transparent during the Festival of Samhain. It's a night when the dead were thought to return and haunt the living. Returned spirits could be good or bad, so crop and animal sacrifices and giant bonfires, and now we do CDs and Bibles, those bonfires were put together in order to appease the Celtic gods. There's also, it's also where it's believed the tradition of wearing costumes came from, because people would attempt to ward off evil spirits by pretending to be one of them. You know all that stuff. You know about Halloween. It's just a fun holiday. We went to... Molly's had two. What has she had? Two parties so far? Yeah, today was her. Last night was the big party at her kindergarten. They have a potluck dinner. Everybody brings something to eat. I guess there are what, about 100, 125 kids in her school? Probably about that. And it's in a Presbyterian church. About a third of the parents, and I guess the kids, are members of the church. The other two-thirds are not. And it's even rumored that there are atheists who attend this preschool, this kindergarten. Among those atheists are Kathy and me. But anyway, it's great fun. We just love this school. Molly now has chapel every Friday. She didn't today because she had her classroom party today, but she has chapel, and that, you know, it's fine. It's kind of, spirit in the sky oriented, but, you know, she's five. It's cool. So we went to the potluck last night, and, you know, everybody was awful. Everybody stayed. Nobody went to work, right? Anyone go to work yesterday? Hello? Anybody? We didn't. We went to our kids', a potluck dinner. I don't think anyone went to work in the entire country. I don't know. I haven't watched television today. So anyway, we went to this potluck dinner last night, and it was great fun. The teachers and, you know, the faculty were dressed in Halloween costumes, and they had goblins and witches. I've never seen so many witches outside of a coven in my life. They were just all over the place, and it was great fun. There's a little playground near the school, so the kids went out on the playground after dinner, playing and dancing and swinging in the darkness, because, you know, it gets dark here in the Atlanta area now about 7 o'clock at night. So it was just a wonderful, fun time. And the people at the Presbyterian preschool, the faculty is mostly members of the church. The principal certainly is. And they decorate the school part of the church, which is in the basement right below the sanctuaries. Actually, the school is on like three or four floors in this huge church building. But anyway, all of this to say, you know, these are Presbyterians. They're not known for licentiousness and getting crazy. You know, they're Presbyterians, for heaven's sake. But they also understand, you know, what Halloween really is. You know, it's an old pagan holiday that's a lot of fun, that has worked its way down through the centuries to the point where, you know, most American kids and I would imagine Canadian kids most kids, Halloween is just celebrated all over the planet. But Pat Robertson's website had a warning up today. Warning Americans of the real threat that we face this season. And I just wonder if our friends at the Presbyterian preschool and kindergarten are aware of this. The threat is demons are lurking in the Halloween candy. in a column on the Christian Broadcast Network's website, something called Kimberly Daniels, who professes to be a writer, asserted that demons sneak into bags of Halloween candy at grocery stores. Not where it's manufactured, but at the grocery stores. Daniels wrote, "Most of the candy sold during the season has been dedicated and prayed over by witches. I do not buy candy during the Halloween season," she writes. "Curses are sent through the tricks and treats of the innocent. Whether they get it by going door to door or by purchasing it from the local grocery store, the demons cannot tell the difference." End quote. Oh my God. Daniels goes on. She asserts that far from being harmless fun, Halloween is a doorway to hell, full of monsters. She writes, "Halloween is much more than a holiday filled with fun and tricks or treats. It is a time for the gathering of evil that masquerades behind the fictitious characters of Dracula, werewolves, mummies, and the witches on brooms. The truth is that these demons that have been presented as scary cartoons actually exist. I have prayed for witches who are addicted to drinking blood and howling at the moon." In other words, she hangs out with the Cheney family. You know, Dick Cheney, the way he got his ruddy complexion so he could go get an award the other night was by drinking the blood of a little Jewish baby. Or was it a Muslim baby? Certainly wouldn't be a Christian baby. No, 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 no. Robertson has long been opposed to Halloween. Back in 1982, he attacked the holiday as a satanic ritual. And he said on his tacky, bitchy program, "I think we ought to close Halloween down." And his network later produced a pamphlet titled "Hallowed or Harmful? Christian Perspective on Halloween." And it said, "During Halloween, little children are particular, are the weak ones." Oh, my God. Can you believe this stuff? I mean, it's just insane. This is madness. But how many people watch and send money to this vile, vicious bastard, Pat Robertson? How many people do? Huh? He's the one, along with Jerry Falwell, who asserted and agreed to the idea that we were attacked on 9/11 because of queers and feminists and liberals, and that God was so pissed off that, how did Robertson put it, he dropped his veil of protection so that we would be attacked. Where was that veil of protection during the War of 1812? Where was it during the Civil War? Where was it when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor? Of course, that wasn't the United States, was it? Oh, well, I, you know, these people are mad. They are truly insane. They are beyond insane. They are in some realm of convoluted mental illness that defies description. Halloween candy is possessed by demons. Well, the truth is, if you are a literal Christian, you do believe in demons and witches and wizards. You do. You must. If you do not, you're not a Christian. The Bible speaks often and frequently of wizards and witches and to be aware of them. And Jesus, how many times did Jesus drive demons away? So, you know, to be a literal Christian, I guess you would believe that Halloween candy is somehow infused with evil.
I can go on since she left me here alone. My one desire is to try not to cry. She might come back one day, by and by. My head is spinning.
Saturday Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Not to be outdone, of course, the Vatican has once again decided that Halloween is a sinister and dangerous undercurrent of occultism in the Roman Catholic Church. Has warned the parents should not allow their children to dress up as ghosts and ghouls tomorrow, calling Halloween a pagan celebration of terror, fear, and death. The church apparently has become a little bit alarmed lately because of recent years, the spread of Halloween traditions starting here and infecting the rest of the world. It's just more proof of the degeneracy of our system. It has nothing to do with the pagan. It has to do with selling costumes made in China and candy made God knows where. The Vatican, L'Osservatore Romano, in an article entitled Halloween's Dangerous Messages, quoted a liturgical expert who said, quote, Halloween has an undercurrent of occultism and is absolutely anti-Christian. Parents should be aware of this and try to direct the meaning of the feast towards wholesomeness and beauty rather than terror, fear, and death. Now, yeah, leave that up to the church. Let the church handle the terror, fear, and death, you know. Accept or die! Oh, well, that's enough. This is interesting. This is from one of our news sources claiming that the president was preying on the public's fear of contracting a fatal disease last week when he declared the H1N1 virus national emergency. Republican leaders announced yesterday that they were officially endorsing the swine flu. Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele said during a press conference, quote, thousands of Americans, hardworking, ordinary Americans like you and me, already have H1N1. Now Obama wants to take that away from us? Ask yourself, do you want the federal government making these kids or these kinds of health care decisions for you and your family? End quote. Other prominent Republicans opposing Obama's declaration of emergency include Louisiana Governor Paiush Jindal, who urged residents of his state to continue not washing their hands, and radio host Rush Limbaugh, who made a point of dying of the virus during his show on Wednesday. So, oh, that's The Onion? Oh, he's still alive? Oh, Jesus. All right. Coming up after the next break, we're going to do a podcast trivia. And then the bottom of the next hour, we will do our infamous reading of The Telltale Heart that we've done every year now for what? What's this, about the 8th year? 9th year? 10th year? It's been a long time. So two instances of podcast trivia this evening, coming up after this next break, and then at the bottom of the third hour of the program tonight, the bottom of the second hour, my reading, as overwrought as it is, of Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart. So stick around for that. What else we got tonight? We have a missive from Prairie 2 that we'll get to this evening. And a couple other things as we end October and move into November, the month that I think it's next week that Barack Obama will be making his decision about how many more people to send to kill and die in an absolutely hopeless as well as pointless war. Kipling said, "It is not wise for the Christian white to hustle the Asian brown. But the Christian riles and the Asian smiles and weareth the Christian down. At the end of the fight lies a tombstone white with the name of the late deceased and the epitaph drear, a fool lies here who tried to hustle the East." That, of course, from Rudyard Kipling, The White Man's Burden. It's not wise for the Christian white to hustle the Asian brown. Yeah. And that from the British Empire's most ardent imperialist poet, Kipling. But even he knew that where it concerns Afghanistan, stay away. Stay far, far away. You know, unless you go there to pay tribute, or you go there to, as you are passing through, in which case you also must pay tribute. But understand that the various principalities, if you will, I guess that's a European way of looking at them, that make up that country, will never, under any circumstances, never, ever, no matter what your ethnic or racial point of origin, be it Greece, Mongol, Great Britain, Russia, or the United States, will never, ever submit to foreign domination. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Molloy.
No one remembers your name when you're strange.
For the hour, we're about ready to play podcast trivia here. Do we have the theme music, madame? It's time once again for podcast trivia, brought to you by your friends at the Molloy Broadcasting Network. Let's start with Daryl, who's in Las Vegas. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm okay. You know how this is played, right?
Yes.
Okay, you ready to do it?
Let's do it.
Okay, here we go. Where was George W. Bush born? Was it Crawford, Texas, Midland, Texas, New Haven, Connecticut, or Kennebunkport, Maine?
What was the first one again?
Crawford, Texas, Midland, Texas, New Haven, Connecticut, or Kennebunkport, Maine?
I believe that was Crawford, Texas.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Daryl. It was New Haven, Connecticut, believe it or not. Next time, we'll try it again. Thanks, Daryl. Okay, who's next here? Tim is in Los Angeles. Hey, Tim.
Hey, happy Halloween, Mike.
Oh, same to you. Thank you very much. Trick or treat and all that, huh?
Heck yeah, and curses to Pat Roberts.
There you go. Well, I hate people that just... Oh, well, never mind.
You're a moron.
Yeah, he is. All right, which of the following is not true of the former First Lady Laura Pickles Bush? A, before marrying George, she was a librarian. B, she was responsible for killing a male classmate in a head-on collision when she was 17. C, she's the only First Lady to have given birth to twins. And D, she ran for mayor as a Democrat in Midland, Texas in 1974. Which one of those is not true?
Oh, God. I'm going to take a guess. C.
Which one?
C, as a throw. Please, be right.
Say it again. Try. Say it again.
C.
Like A, B?
And C, yes.
C, the only First Lady. No, that's true. You know, she's got her two daughters, her two twin daughters.
She was the only one.
Yeah, the things, you know, I asked you which is not true.
Oh.
And it was D, running for mayor, as a Democrat in Midland, Texas in 1974. Oh, well, we'll try again. Thanks, Tim. All right, guys. Are these that hard? Okay, let's try. Dave is in Phoenix. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, I love your program. I think you're a great broadcaster. I like your humor, your anger, but I think your professionalism as a broadcaster, I don't think it gets talked about enough. And all right, that out of the way.
Okay, well, you win. You get the podcast. For, no. All right, here we go. Complete the following Bush quote. There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, A, I think, therefore I am a thinker. B, people who live in glass stones shouldn't throw houses. C, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. Or D, a bird in the hand is worth two in the, why can I never remember that word? I know it like I know my own name.
Geez, it seems like I've heard all of those, but the glass houses one really stands out for some reason.
Let me read them again. A, I think, therefore I'm a thinker. B, people who live in glass stones shouldn't throw houses. C, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't get fooled again. Or D, a bird in the hand is worth two in the. Well, I can't remember that word. I know it like I know my own name.
All right, I'm going to say C like Charlie.
C like Charlie. That's it. All right.
Yeah.
Way to go. Way to go. All right.
I'm so excited.
I'll put you on hold, Dave, and Kathy will take the information. All right. Podcast trivia. Dave wins. All right. We'll be doing this again, not the bottom of next hour, but the bottom of the third hour tonight. Bottom of next hour will be my reading, which I do every Halloween, of The Telltale Heart, Edgar Allan Poe's Telltale Heart. Just like we read from the book of... I don't know if I'm going to do it this year, the book of Matthew, the Christmas story. I don't know. A little tidbit here. I've just got a bunch of tidbits. I just hate to get into the topics of the day because they're all so damn grim. You know what I'm saying? I just, we had this conversation last night as we're coming back out into the country from Kathy's, or from Molly's, kindergarten, school, potluck and party, cause, Halloween party. We're having this conversation. Molly's in the back seat drifting off. And Kathy and I were talking once again about how, you know, how talk radio used to be kind of fun, and now it is populated about 99.9% with geeks, lunatics, and morons. It just is. Everybody on the right is just out of their minds, and they own everything. There's only about five of us, liberals or progressives left. Out of maybe, I don't know what, a couple of hundred right-wingers from the sludge, all the way, down to the little pipsqueaks, but, It's just, you know, I really question, maybe you've done this before too, you know, you get to a point where you really start questioning what you're doing and why you're doing it. So, in that light, I saw this in a New Scientist magazine online, apparently on the 8th of October, what was it, what's today, this is the 30th, 3 weeks ago. An asteroid, there was a big one heading this way, well, it was big enough, and over Indonesia, those poor bastards, everything happens out there, tidal waves, earthquakes, asteroid, it exploded over Indonesia, high in the atmosphere above South Sulawesi, Indonesia, releasing about as much energy as 50,000 tons of TNT. That's about three times more powerful than the A-bomb that we dropped on Hiroshima, making it one of the largest asteroid explosions ever observed. Now, the one at, is it Tunguska? The one in Siberia that occurred decades ago, that apparently was a real monster, but nobody saw that one. The blast, this one I'm talking about, caused no damage on the ground because it blew up about 20 kilometers above Earth's surface, which is, what, about 16 miles, 18 miles? That's according to Peter Brown, astronomer at the University of Western Ontario, Canada. Brown and his associate estimated the explosion energy from infrasound waves that rippled halfway around the world were recorded by an international network of instruments that listens for nuclear explosions. The explosion was heard by witnesses in Indonesia, and video images of the sky following the event show a dust trail characteristic of an exploding asteroid. Now, this thing, according to estimates, it releases the same energy of 50,000 tons of TNT. It was only 10 meters across. 10 meters across. What is that, 18 feet? Objects of that size are thought to hit Earth about once per decade. No telescope spotted the asteroid ahead of its impact. That's not surprising, because we are not equipped to monitor this stuff. A U.S. Office of Science and Technology Policy, which advises the White House, has to develop a policy. They don't have one to address the asteroid hazard by October 2010, under a deadline imposed by legislation last fall. So one more thing you can get concerned about. From Prairie 2, the U.S. gross domestic product was sharply up last quarter. Consumer spending, which used to make up almost 70% of the economy, continues to decline, and there was no growth in income. New home sales were down sharply in September. So what's wrong with that equation? Any measure of the real economy is down, but the GDP is up 3.5%. Huh? The missing variable here is financial services. Trillions of dollars created out of thin air sloshing back and forth across the economy. This phony economic activity, Prairie 2 writes, is pumping up the GDP but produces nothing. And in fact, when one of those tsunami waves of money hits your segment of the economy, you can be washed away. The price of oil is up again and sucking money out of the real economy to fill the money bin at Goldman Sachs. But hey, it makes the GDP look better. The music's playing. Everybody dance now. The number of unemployed continues to increase. The jobs continue to leave the country, and the trade deficit continues to grow. China continues to dump dollars anywhere in the world that they can to build up their commodity reserves. At some point, the people getting those dollars will want to spend them, and nobody will take them. Then, the dance music will stop. Let's see, 6 emails that 10 meters is 33 feet. I don't even know what I said. I'm sure I got it wrong. I've never been good at conversion anyway. So I guess that was in regard to the asteroid story, right? Thanks, everybody. excuse me, email from France. Carlton in France, who says, Mike, I know more about spooky stuff than I care to, but never heard of haints. Fill us in if you can. A haint. Sure, a haint is pretty much a southern term to begin with. And it may be an African-American version of haunt. A haint is I've always heard it used as a noun more than a verb. A haint is a ghost, a spooky character, a spirit, something that is there to probably not do you too much good. There was an old custom in the slave communities for the little children to have their hair tied up in knots, all kinds of knots on their head, the little African kids, to keep the haints away, keep the witches and the spooks away. And I guess that's how it entered into the American vernacular, haint. It's a ghost. This is from Mark, who writes, "Dear Mike, after hearing you read Bob Alexander's epilogue the other night, I found myself shaking my head in agreement until my fellow subway travelers took me for crazy. It comes to great pain for me to acknowledge that Bob is right when he says, we've lost. The left has little to celebrate right now, and if I may, I'd like to share why I feel particularly sure Bob Alexander's correct. I'm 22 years old, and I attend what is purported to be one of the most liberal institutions in the United States, the New School here in New York. My school has a striking history of progressive thinking, with individuals having been associated with the institution, including Eric Fromm, John Cage, Hannah Arendt, and even Hannah Arendt at one point. This was partly responsible for my interest in coming to the New School in the first place. But an awful lot has changed since then. I'm continually shocked at the malignant apathy. Malignant apathy. My peer group expresses toward people participating in much-needed direct action. Sure, there are a few of us who have retained our sanity and recognize the unspeakable need to fight the right-wing juggernaut in this society, if the society is ever to recover from the past 30 to 60 years, but we are a laughable minority. This probably wouldn't surprise me if I attended, say, Harvard Business School, but I absolutely do not. In fact, the New School here in New York City doesn't even teach such courses. It's primarily a liberal arts institution with two music divisions and a fairly renowned philosophy department. I never would have expected such a right-leaning peer group, especially since they all claim to be so leftist. One of my former roommates used to jokingly refer to herself as, quote, practically a commie, end quote. And yet she recently told me that if Obama pushes this health care reform through Congress, that we'll all be crippled with taxes and debt for the rest of our lives. Another person I know recently gave me a rather vicious anti-union spiel on Labor Day, saying unions are bad for business and serve no discernible function. One of my current roommates always argues against activism, ridiculing protesters as ineffectual dumbasses who should just shut up and instead do something important. They think I'm nuts when I express my fears and concerns about the rise of Christian dominionism, the seemingly endless supply of American nativism, or the immeasurable right-wing domination of news and the national discourse. That, in a nutshell, is my generation's state of mind, one that has apparently been so successfully corrupted by right-wing propaganda, one so totally unsympathetic to the least among us, and worst of all, one so totally averse to the fundamental changes so desperately needed. There will be no massive anti-war demonstrations, there will be no protests regarding health care or climate change, and there will be no national strikes. There will only be silence, complacency, and apathy. I remain confounded as to how this can be, but I must confront it every day. As this country slides into the morass of the coming years, I fear whom my peers will turn to for answers. It will not be a kind voice." Mark. Yow. Well. Yeah. I think it was about a year or two ago, more than that, I guess at the height of the Bush craziness, I was rambling one night about living under fascism, and I said, unless you're a targeted group under fascism, and fascism will target whatever group feels it needs to in order to elevate itself, A, B, to continue its elevation and sea to rid the fascist society of undesirables. So if you're not in one of those groups, okay. Fascism is a condition under which it is possible to maintain your life, as long as you're not attacked by an outside force, or as long as you don't try to expand your fascism outside your borders, in which case you probably, well, at least 80 years ago, you would be attacked. Fascism was a system under which you could live if you just kept your head down and kept your mouth shut. And horrifyingly, it looks as though we're kind of moving towards that, doesn't it? Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. Molloy Show on Halloween, our Halloween program. Halloween's tomorrow. Hope you have fun going trick-or-treating. You got some kids you can go trick-or-treat with? Your own or nieces or nephews or just hang out in the neighborhood? Huh? We go into town for our trick-or-treating because there are too many haints wandering around in the cornfields out here. It's those big rolls of hay that you see. I don't know where what part of the country you live in, but down here in the south, we still bale it up, but we also roll it. These great big, it look like great big old Nabisco shredded wheat biscuits, about the size of an SUV, and there's haints in there. So you know, we don't mess around out here in the country roads. We go into town. Nicholas Kristof, writing at the New York Times the other day, was talking about how, you've heard this before, about instead of sending more troops to Afghanistan, why don't we send teachers or schools? He says sending more troops is most likely is going to be a waste of lives and resources that eventually is simply empower the Taliban. And one of the most compelling arguments against more troops is there's a stunning trade-off here that he points out. For the cost of a single additional soldier stationed in Afghanistan for 1 year, one soldier in Afghanistan, 1 year, the cost of keeping that soldier in Afghanistan for 1 year is the same cost that it would take to build roughly 20 schools in Afghanistan. For the cost of 40,000 troops over a few years, we could almost turn every Afghan into a PhD, right? Now, I don't know how many of you heard of Greg Mortensen. He's the author of Three Cups of Tea. It has to do with the ritual of sitting down with Afghans and talking. But he has built now 39 schools in Afghanistan and 92 in Pakistan. Not one has been burned down or closed. That's a big argument. We can't build them. The religious police will come in and destroy them. I guess in some of the tribal areas that may be true, but the aid organization CARE has 295 schools, educated 50,000 girls in Afghanistan. Not a single one has been closed or burned by the Taliban. The Afghan Institute for Learning, another aid group, has 32 schools in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and none closed by the Taliban. In short, as Kristof writes, there is still vast scope for greater investment in education, health, and agriculture in Afghanistan. He says, for example, we have already in Afghanistan increased our troop strength by 40,000 troops since the beginning of the year. And the result has not been the promised stability, only more casualties, strengthened insurgency. If the last surge of 40,000 troops didn't help, why will the next one be different? Well, sure. And Matthew P. Ho, we quoted this guy the other day, an American military veteran who was the top civilian officer in Zabul province, resigned over Afghan policy, the guy that worked for the U.S. Foreign Service. He, as the Washington Post reported this week, Mr. Ho argues that our military presence is feeding the insurgency, not quelling it. And this week, remember the pictures of the students at Kabul University burning Obama in effigy until police dispersed them with gunshots? It's the same old story. The heavier our military footprint, the more resentment. Well, yeah. Christoph writes this, since 9/11, the United States has spent $15 billion in Pakistan, mostly on military support, and today Pakistan is more unstable than ever. In contrast, Bangladesh, which until 1971 was a part of Pakistan, remember it was called East Pakistan, remember that? That country, Bangladesh, has focused on education in a way that Pakistan never did. Bangladesh now has more girls in high school than boys. These educated Bangladeshi women joined the labor force, laying the foundation for a garment industry and working in civil society groups, which has led to a spiral of development, jobs, lower birth rates, education, and stability. That's one reason Al-Qaeda is in Pakistan and not Bangladesh. It's a reminder that education can transform societies, if anybody's paying attention. Christoph says, when I travel to Pakistan, I see evidence that one group, Islamic extremists, believes in the transformative power of education. They pay for madrasas that provide free schooling and often free meals for students. They then offer scholarships for the best pupils to study abroad in Wahhabi madrasas before returning to become leaders in their communities. What I don't see on my trips is similar numbers of American-backed schools. It breaks my heart that we don't invest in schools as much as these medieval misogynist extremists do. For roughly the same cost as stationing 40,000 troops in Afghanistan for 1 year, we could educate the great majority of the 75 million children worldwide who, according to UNICEF, are not getting even a primary education. Nah, that'll never happen. No, an informed global citizen is not what fascism wants. Fascism wants an uninformed or ill-informed or misinformed population to deal with. They're easier to move around. That's why education, intelligent education, is not presented in religious schools. I don't care if they're madrasas or evangelical fundamentalist Christian schools here. I guess Catholic schools still teach, in the United States anyway, a foundational education, don't they? I don't know. Well, I guess so, because the Pope has said that Christianity can coexist with Darwinism, or whatever he called it. But the mere idea of drawing that comparison, one U.S. troop in Afghanistan for 1 year equals in cost what it would take to build 20 schools in that country. That comparison, shocking as it is, as clear as it is, means nothing to us. Absolutely nothing. You know, Christoph might as well say, you know, for every rock lying on the ground in Afghanistan, there are two cacti growing in Arizona. I mean, you know, nonsense, nonsensical statements. It just doesn't make any sense to try to convince the American public to stop funding these adventures in destruction that always come back and eat us alive ever since 1945. Anything we've gotten involved in has eaten us alive. It has reduced our respect around the planet. It has cost us innumerable lives, and I'm not just talking about the dead, I'm talking about the American wounded also, and the ones that are wounded psychologically, in addition to all the people we've murdered in the name of capitalism. It's not a good record. You know, I said months ago, years ago, if there is such a thing as a karmic balance that is determined through some sort of relative physical world or non-physical world, if karma exists, we're in a world of hurt. The United States is. We're in deep trouble if there is such a thing as balance. And, you know, would it not be a good idea to start acknowledging that and ending our warlike stance? Just stop it. I mean, isn't there a way to stop it? There is no threat on earth that we can't deal with if we would just come home. But, of course, we are not the threatened. We are the threat-er. We're not the threat-e. We threaten the rest of the world with whatever it is we threaten with now. I don't know. But, you know, when I read that today, you know, I disagree with Christoph in a lot of positions, and you probably do too. But, you know, those are just simple, clearly definable facts. How much it costs. And what a different outcome might be if we focused on building through education rather than destroying through, you know, bombing, whatever we're doing. But we'll never learn, no.
If you want to save your soul from hell riding on our range, then cowboy, change your ways. They are with us, you will ride, trying to catch the devil's herd across these endless skies.
It was a little zombie baby that we found. 21 past the hour. After the next break, when we come back, immediately coming back, it'll be Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart, as recorded by moi. Prairie 2 says, regarding the asteroid story, Prairie 2 said, you've heard of the Chicago fire, of course, but there was a larger, more deadly fire in northern Wisconsin the same night. There were, in fact, many large fires across North America that night. None was ever explained. The Miss O'Leary cow story doesn't check out. There is a hypothesis that they were all started by comet fragments. Sky anomalies recorded by weather observers and newspaper reports support this notion. Wear your hard hat. We're about due for another one. That's all right. Oh, man. You know, I saw this in the... it was at the Times online, because it'll be in the Times tomorrow, about that 250-point drop in the stock market today, 2.5%. And... that means they gave up all the gains they made on Thursday when enthusiasm over economic growth data sent stocks surging. But now, according to what the writer of the Times wants us to believe, and I'm not getting his case, it's just, you know, the conventional wisdom, the stocks plunged today because of this report on consumer spending. There isn't any. And as Prairie 2 pointed out in his report tonight, you know, as in certain times, as much as 70% of this economy is driven by consumer spending. And when I heard the other day, you know, the stock market jumped 200 points, and, you know, the pundits are saying, oh, well, maybe we're seeing the light. excuse me, I had to sneeze, at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, I hate that because, I mean, anybody with the sense of a, you know, sack of doorknobs understand that's not the case for one simple reason. I know this is going to be a news flash, but there are no jobs. Unemployment, real unemployment in this country, if you consider underemployment, is probably hovering around 18-20%. That's across the board for certain ethnic or racial groups in this country. I'm sorry, for certain racial or economic groups in this country, it is as high as 40%. Now, if folks don't have money, how in the hell are we supposed to spend it? Are we supposed to do what we did the last 10 years and just load it onto our credit cards and suck it out of our home equity? There's a couple of jokes, huh? I guess for a lot of people, that was fun while it lasted. It was certainly fun for corporate America. They're the ones that encouraged it. Oh, yeah. Hot damn. Come on. Think back. How long ago was it? A year ago? 2 years ago? Especially 3 or 4 years ago. All those television commercials about sucking the equity out of your home, refinancing your home, get the money, spend. Remember all that? Remember that? I've never seen anything like that. And I was paying attention. You know, we just, you know, all I'm doing is just saying this. We didn't do that. We didn't do that at our house. Not at all. Not a dime. Nothing. We just kind of watched. I know a lot of people who just didn't do that. I mean, you know, whatever. But remember that? That was, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. What was it? Ditech? Was that the one that every time you turned on your damn television, you would run into 15 or 20 of these Ditech commercials? It seemed like an hour. All of that to fuel consumer spending, because even then the jobs are disappearing. And it was also fake. Remember? All of it was fake. Nobody really knew what was going on. The last two Christmases, you know, that great Christian holiday where America's retailers just gnaw their fingernails down to a bone, hoping that people go in and buy all that junk, garbage crap that sits in these stores. You know, that's what gets me about the right wingers where it concerns Christmas. You know, they want to keep the commercial in Christmas. What a bunch of ass wipes. I mean, they really are. If you really wanted to do Christmas in a Christian sense, you know what you do? It's just end the commercial. Oh, come on. You know what I'm talking about. But, to see America's retailers, I don't care if it's Macy's or Hudson, well, Hudson's gone, isn't it? Yeah. I don't care what the store is, Walmart, Kmart, Target, all the big retailers. You know, Christmas is no more about the little baby Jesus than it's about warts on your butt. Christmas is about buy, 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 buy! Buy, goddammit! Give us some profit! Well, guess what's going to happen this year? Yeah, you already figured that out. The last couple of years, remember when it would be flat or up 1% and the retailers would just, oh my God, oh my God. And of course, dumbass consumers, and I'm not going to put myself in that class because I'm not a dumbass consumer. I'm not a dumbass buyer. I'm just not. And I doubt if you are either. But, you know, you look at these sales, so-called, the efforts, the desperate efforts to suck you into these malls, these huge, just craven open pits of consumers and capitalism. And now, you know, the stock market goes, oh, well, okay, consumer spending's down. No kidding, you dumbasses. What did you think? What do you think people, what are people using to buy? There's no jobs, therefore no money. Retirement funds have disappeared. Equity in homes it is as permanent as spring snow. What does capitalist America want from us?
His hair was perfect.
Nervous. Very, very dreadfully nervous I had been and am. But why will you say that I am mad? The disease had sharpened my senses, not destroyed, not dulled them. Above all was the sense of hearing acute. I heard all things in the heaven and in the earth. I heard many things in hell. How then am I mad? Hearken and observe how healthily, how calmly I can tell you the whole story. It is impossible to say how first the idea entered my brain, but once conceived, it haunted me day and night. Object there was none. Passion there was none. I loved the old man. He had never wronged me. He had never given me insult. For his gold I had no desire. I think it was his eye. Yes, it was this. He had the eye of a vulture, a pale blue eye with a film over it. Whenever it fell upon me, my blood ran cold, and so by degrees, very gradually, I made up my mind to take the life of the old man and thus rid myself of the eye forever. Now this is the point. You fancy me mad. Madmen know nothing, but you should have seen me. You should have seen how wisely I proceeded, with what caution, with what foresight, with what dissimulation I went to work. I was never kinder to the old man than during the week before I killed him. And every night, about midnight, I turned the latch of his door and opened it also gently. And then, when I had made an opening sufficient for my head, I put in a dark lantern, all closed, closed, that no light shone out. And then I thrust in my head. Oh, you would have laughed to see how cunningly I thrust it in. I moved it slowly. Very, very slowly, so that I might not disturb the old man's sleep. It took me an hour to place my whole head within the opening so far that I could see him as he lay upon his bed. Ha! Would a madman have been so wise as this? And then, when my head was well in the room, I undid the lantern cautiously, oh so cautiously, cautiously, for the hinges creaked. I undid it just so much that a single thin ray fell upon the vulture eye. And this I did for 7 long nights, every night just at midnight. But I found the eye always closed, and so it was impossible to do the work, for it was not the old man who vexed me, but his evil eye. And every morning when the day broke, I went boldly into the chamber and spoke courageously to him, calling him by name in a hearty tone and inquiring how he had passed the night. So you see, he would have been a very profound old man indeed to suspect that every night, just at 12, I looked in upon him while he slept. Upon the 8th night, I was more than usually cautious in opening the door. A watch's minute hand moved more quickly than did mine. Never before that night had I felt the extent of my own powers, of my sagacity. I could barely contain my feelings of triumph. To think that there I was, opening the door little by little, and he not even to dream of my secret deeds or thoughts. I fairly chuckled at the idea. And perhaps he heard me, for he moved on the bed suddenly, as if startled. Now, you may think that I drew back, but no. His room was as black as pitch, with the thick darkness, for the shutters were close, fastened, through fear of robbers. And so I knew that he could not see the opening of the door, and I kept pushing it on steadily, steadily. I had my head in, and was about to open the lantern when my thumb slipped upon the tin fastening, and the old man sprang up in bed, crying out, "Who's there?" I kept quiet, and still, and said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle, and in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. He was still sitting up in the bed, listening, just as I have done night after night, hearkening to the death watches in the wall. Presently, I heard a slight groan, and I knew it was the groan of mortal terror. It was not a groan of pain or of grief. Oh, no, it was the low, stifled sound that arises from the bottom of the soul. When overcharged with awe, I knew the sound well. Many a night, just at midnight, when all the world slept, it has welled up from my own bosom, deepening with its dreadful echo the terrors that distracted me. I say I knew it well. I knew what the old man felt. I pitied him, although I chuckled at heart. I knew that he had been lying awake ever since the first slight noise, when he had turned in the bed. His fears had been ever since growing upon him. He had been trying to fancy them causeless, but could not. He had been saying to himself, "It is nothing but the wind in the chimney. It is only a mouse crossing the floor, or it is merely a cricket which has made a single chirp." Yes, he had been trying to comfort himself with these suppositions, but he had found all in vain. All in vain, because death, in approaching him, had stalked with his black shadow before him and enveloped the victim. And it was the mournful influence of the unperceived shadow that caused him to feel, although he never saw nor heard, to feel the presence of my head within the room. When I had waited a long time, very patiently, without hearing him lie down, I resolved to open a little, a very, very little crevice in the lantern. So I opened it. You cannot imagine how stealthily, stealthily, until at length a simple dim ray, like the thread of a spider, shot from out the crevice and fell full upon the vulture eye. It was open, wide, wide open. and I grew furious as I gazed upon it. I saw it with perfect distinctness, all a dull blue with a hideous veil over it that chilled the very marrow in my bones. But I could see nothing else of the old man's face or person, for I had directed the ray as if by instinct precisely upon the damned spot. And have I not told you that what you mistake for madness is but over-acuteness of the sense? Now, I say there came to my ears a dull, low, quick sound, such as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I knew that sound well. It was the beating of the old man's heart. It increased my fury as the beating of a drum stimulates the soldier on to courage. But even yet I refrained and kept still. I scarcely breathed. I held the lantern motionless. I tried how steadily I could to maintain the ray upon the eye. Meantime, the hellish tattoo of the heart increased. It grew quicker and quicker and louder every instant. The old man's terror must have been extreme. It grew louder, I say, louder every moment. Do you mark me well? I have told you that I am nervous, so I am. And now, at the dead hour of the night, amid the dreadful silence of that old house, so strange a noise as this excited me to uncontrollable terror. Yet for some minutes longer I refrained and stood still. But the beating grew louder, louder. I thought the heart must burst. And now a new anxiety seized me. The sound would be heard by a neighbor. The old man's hour had come. With a loud yell, I threw open the lantern and leaped into the room. He shrieked once, once only. In an instant, I dragged him to the floor and pulled the heavy bed over him. Then smiled gaily to find the deed so far done. But for many minutes, the heart beat on with a muffled sound. This, however, did not vex me. It would not be heard through the wall. At length it ceased. The old man was dead. I removed the bed and examined the corpse. Yes, he was stone, stone dead. I placed my hand upon the heart and held it there many minutes. There was no pulsation. He was stone dead. His eye would trouble me no longer. If still you think me mad, you will think so no longer when I describe the wise precautions I took for the concealment of the body. The night waned, and I worked hastily, but in silence. First of all, I dismembered the corpse. I cut off the head and the arms and the legs. I then took up three planks from the flooring of the chamber and deposited all between the scantlings. I then replaced the boards so cleverly, so cunningly, that no human eye, not even his, could have detected anything wrong. There was nothing to wash out, no stain of any kind, no blood spot whatever. I had been too wary for that. A tub had caught all when I had made an end of these labors. It was 4 o'clock, still dark as midnight. As the bell sounded the hour, there came a knocking at the street door. I went down to open it with a light heart, for what had I now to fear? There entered three men who introduced themselves with perfect suavity as officers of the police. A shriek had been heard by a neighbor during the night. Suspicion of foul play had been aroused. Information had been lodged at the police office, and they, the officers, had been deputed to search the premises. I smiled, for what had I to fear? I bade the gentlemen welcome. The shriek, I said, was my own in a dream. The old man, I mentioned, was absent in the country. I took my visitors all over the house. I bade them search. Search well. I led them at length to his chamber. I showed him his treasure, secure, undisturbed. In the enthusiasm of my confidence, I brought chairs into the room and desired them here to rest from their fatigues, while I myself, in the wild audacity of my perfect triumph, placed my own seat upon the very spot beneath which reposed the corpse of the victim. The officers were satisfied. My manner had convinced them. I was singularly at ease. They sat, and while I answered cheerily, they chatted of familiar things. But ere long, I felt myself getting pale and wished them gone. My head ached, and I fancied ringing in my ears. But still they sat and still chatted. The ringing became more distinct. It continued and became more distinct. I talked more freely to get rid of the feeling, but it continued and gained definiteness until at length I found that the noise was not within my ears. No doubt I now grew very pale, but I talked more fluently and with a heightened voice. Yet the sound increased. And what could I do? It was a low, dull, quick sound, much like a sound as a watch makes when enveloped in cotton. I gasped for breath, and yet the officers heard it not. I talked more quickly, more vehemently, but the noise steadily increased. I arose and argued about trifles in a high key and with violent gesticulations, but the noise steadily increased. Why would they not be gone? I paced the floor to and fro with heavy strides, as if excited to fury by the observations of the men, but the noise steadily increased. Oh, God, what could I do? I foamed, I raved, I swore. I swung the chair upon which I had been sitting and grated it upon the boards. But the noise arose over all and continually increased. It grew louder, 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 and still the men chatted pleasantly and smiled. Was it possible they heard not? Almighty God, no! No, they heard! They suspected! They knew! They were making a mockery of my horror. This, I thought, and this, I think. But anything else, anything was better than this agony. Anything was more tolerable than this derision. I could bear those hypocritical smiles no longer. I felt that I must scream or die. And now, again, hark, louder, 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 louder! Villains, I shrieked, dissemble no more. I admit the deed. Tear up the planks. Here, here, it is the beating of his hideous heart.
Some days
hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
There's nothing to be afraid of. It's 10 before the hour. The phone number here is 877-996-2556 if you'd like to join in. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Tom.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. It was a monster from the slab, and he began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the mash. He did the monster mash.
Yeah, that's
I'm going to stop it. I'm going to
stop good,
it.
Good, thank you.
I'm going to stop it. Look, okay. Now. Okay, I want to know, you, my boy, and I've been with you for a couple of years, and you have an audience. Believe it or not, it's hard to believe, okay? I know.
Yeah,
you
know,
really.
Yeah,
as big as your ego is. Okay, you have an audience. What do you think about Barack Obama not stepping up to the plate on this health care plan, not saying nothing? I want to know. I want to know what you, Mike Malloy, that's what I want to know. Where is he?
Well, you got to stay off the speed, Tom. You really do. I mean, I realize kitchen mess is all the rage right now, but this stuff will kill you. I'm real disappointed in Barack Obama too, in his efforts or lack of efforts regarding healthcare. I mean, what can I say? You know, I think it's terrible. I really do. Thanks, Tom. Calm down. Just try to calm down a little bit. Everything will be okay. You know what I'm saying? Who was it? It was Henry Kissinger that said, Eric Margolis writing in the Toronto Sun, I believe. He remembers something Henry Kissinger once said, that being America's ally can be more dangerous than being its enemy. Like poor Hamid Karzai, the former oil company lobbyist and CIA asset installed as Afghanistan's president. And as Margolis points out, as the U.S. increasingly gets its backside kicked in Afghanistan, it has blamed poor old Karzai for its woes and bumbling. You can almost hear Washington rebuking, bad puppet, bad puppet. I saw that today in the Toronto Sun and almost lost my lunch. That's funny. That's funny. Also today, President Obama, he got a lot of media attention, this report at Raw Story, yesterday or 2 days ago for signing a hate crimes bill into law. But on the same day, the U.S. president also signed a Homeland Security spending bill that received less attention, even though it effectively blocks efforts to reveal photos of detainee abuse in U.S. custody. Jamil Jaffer, National Security Director for the ACLU, said in a statement, quote, "We are disappointed that the president has signed a law giving the Defense Department the authority to hide evidence of its own misconduct. And we hope the Defense Secretary will not take advantage of that authority by suppressing photos related to the abuse of prisoners," end quote. I don't understand why anybody in the anti-war or peace establishment in this country continues to believe that those photos are going to come out as long as they cannot be used to the advantage of the power structure in this country, whether it's Democrat or Republican. Those photos will not be revealed. And all the lawsuits on heaven and earth are not going to do anything to get evidence of what we did to people in our custody. It's not going to happen. Carlos is in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Carlos.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Carlos.
My friend. I was, I used to live in a band, which I lost now.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. You know, and I'm excited, man. But you're the only honest person, man. I mean, from a person that knows about, you know, by the way, I used to belong to the Brown Berets, you know?
The Brown Berets?
Yeah, you remember them?
Kind of like the
Chicano Black Panthers.
Right. I was going to say, yeah. Kind of like the Black Panthers, only
yeah.
not.
Not as big as them, you know?
Right.
But anyway, I've been homeless most of my life. But one day I was laying down in my band and listening over a little radio. Here you come, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy as you are. And I'm a person that knows the hypocrisy of the whole world.
Yeah.
I mean, when I listen to shows, when I listen to Tom Harmon, Randy Rose, and all of them, I mean, the Mighty Dollar, you can tell rules them, you know?
You think?
Oh, hell yeah, man. There's no doubt, especially, you know, when it comes to put, you know, like if you talk about Israel.
Yeah.
Touch a subject with Hartman and Randy and the replacement for Mr. Dolph Schultz himself or whatever his name is, Ed Schultz.
Yeah.
You know, when you say something about Israel, oh, you anti-Jewish, blah, blah, blah. You know, I often wonder, you ever hear that phrase about the definition of insanity?
Yes, I have.
And repeating it constantly, I often wonder, you know, what is it about? Because I consider they're not a race, they're called like the Catholics and everything, you know?
Mm.
And why is it, anyway, I don't want to get on them because they accuse you right away of being anti-Semitic, you know?
Yeah. Well, I do know that definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different reaction. Because
yes.
You know what, Carlos? I do it here every night, man. Hey, listen, I got to go. It's time for a break.
Hey, let me tell you something.
Quick.
You're right on, bro. You're right on. And this Obama, I never voted before because I didn't believe I voted for him. It's all the same, man. Corporations, and Hartman. I'm sorry that, you know, him, but I wish you make money, man.
Hey, listen, man, I wish that too. Thanks, Carlos. I got to go.
Thank you.
Welcome back. 7 past the hour, the Halloween program on the Malloy Show. Torture photos. You know, it is so in keeping with the season, isn't it? Obama signed a bill into law, the Homeland Security Spending Bill, which had a section or an amendment or a segment that denies access to these photos, 21 photos of detainees in U.S. custody. The photos apparently may show acts of sexual abuse, sexual humiliation being carried out against detainees. Major General Antonio Taguba, the author of a report on allegations of detainee abuse in U.S. prisons in Iraq, said the photos exist. That photos exist depicting the following: an American soldier apparently raping a female prisoner, a male translator apparently raping a male detainee, and a female prisoner having her clothing forcibly removed to expose her breasts. Other photographs depict sexual assaults on prisoners with a truncheon, a wire, a phosphorescent tube. This is according to General Antonio Taguba, Major General. That's a 3-star general. It's 2 stars, I guess. Oh, well, then it's not valid, right? It's some horrible stuff. According to a report at Mother Jones, some 224 documents relating to the Bush administration's torture techniques could be released by the government as early as, today or the first of the week. Among those documents could be a 59-page 2002 top secret memo from the Pentagon detailing torture techniques. So the Obama administration, in order to maintain the cover-up, has decided to deny access to the public or the media regarding what we've done. Well, that's probably a good thing, right? Huh? That's probably a good thing. Sure, why not? You know, we can't let this stuff get out. Are you kidding me? Come on, this is America, home of the free and the brave and yada, yada, yada. Oh, no, you're kidding me. Okay, Joy is in New York City. Joy, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes, I was listening to you about talking about capitalism and Christmas and right. Buying into the baloney. And, you know, I don't understand what you're trying to say. First of all, businesses, this is what this country was built on. I have a business, okay? And when people come,
you're confusing. No. Hold on. I'll put you on hold until you stop your motor mouth. This is the Malloy program, not the Joy program. You're confusing two issues. First is the commercialization of Christmas. If you do you follow? I mean, do you practice the celebration of Christmas?
Absolutely, I do.
Well, Back on hold. You have to have some manners, Joy. I realize you're a right winger. I realize there are things you want to say, but you have to have some manners. Now try to behave yourself the way your mama taught you. Okay, I'm going to try one more time. Okay. Now, do you celebrate, what part of Christmas do you celebrate? Do you celebrate it as the birth of your Savior, Jesus Christ, or do
Absolutely.
You celebrate? Okay, well, do you not see a corruption of that celebration with the commercialization of Christmas?
Absolutely, but don't you understand?
Well, what do you think? What do you think has corrupted it? It's capitalism.
First of all, capitalism.
No, wait. Stay on topic. Joy, there you go again. I have to put you on hold again. Joy, you've got to control yourself. You really do. Capitalism is what has destroyed Christmas. That's the only thing that's destroyed Christmas. Don't you agree?
Hello?
Do you agree that capitalism is the only thing that's destroyed Christmas?
Absolutely not.
Well, what destroyed it then?
Christmas is not destroyed. It's what you teach your children, okay, about Christ and giving.
Oh.
And you could give to people also, and you could also buy things to make other people's life happy.
Yeah, okay.
See, I honestly believe that people like you don't like capitalism because You've never owned a business. You've never run a business.
Well, let me ask you something. Hold on. Right. You know, one of the things that they sell at Christmas, Joy, are chia pets. You know, the ones that grow some kind of plant material. What does that have to do with the baby Jesus?
It doesn't have anything to do with the baby Jesus.
Well, then why link it to Christmas?
But listen, we link many things to things that we shouldn't.
Hold on. We're only talking about Christmas.
Right, but
capitalism didn't, don't you know that Jesus drove the money changers out of the temple? He didn't like all that.
No, wait.
Don't you know in the Bible it says, easier a man, or a camel pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man enter into the gates of heaven?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, don't, wait. Didn't you? Okay, back on hold. Are you not familiar with the part of the Bible where Jesus told anyone who wanted to be one of his disciples, to follow him, to give away all their earthly belongings and take up their cross and follow him? Do you remember that part?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well then, what was
please.
Jesus? Was Jesus? No, wait. There you go again. Wait a minute. These are just questions, Joy. You have to control yourself. Let me ask you something. Was Jesus a capitalist?
No, but...
Wait. No, you're absolutely right. He wasn't. You know what he was? He was a democratic socialist. Do you want some proof? Do you remember the sermon I think it was the Sermon on the Mount, maybe not, but where he fed the multitudes with loaves and fishes? Do you remember that?
Sir.
Okay, now wait.
Sir,
No, wait. Joy, you've got to do this right. We're almost home. We're almost there. Do you remember that that instance where he fed the multitudes with loaves and fishes? Yes or no?
You listen to me now.
No. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Oh, my God. Well, if you remember that, do you think that Jesus was acting as a capitalist? He gave it away.
No, wait.
Calm down. Okay, back on hold. If he was a capitalist, right, he would have sold the loaves and fishes. He would add a special, maybe. 2-for-1, you know, a loaf of bread to get the fish free. But he didn't do that, did he?
Yes, he didn't do that.
No, he didn't. You know why? Because he was a, now listen, here it comes, socialist.
I own a business. And do you know when I drove down and a woman was there at a diner, I gave her $500?
Oh, my God! You did it!
I didn't write
you
that
get,
down.
You gave away $500! Really?
Yes.
All at one time.
Do you know why I did it to
her? No, because you're Jesus.
She was in need, exactly. And I have a business where I can give it away.
Yeah?
And I don't write it off like the other.
Well, let me ask you something,
okay.
Joy. When you gave it away, you were acting like a socialist. Does Walmart give it away?
Praise of Jesus Christ. Who says, give to the unfortunate if you have it.
Hey, does Walmart give it away?
To give things. Because you never owned a business. And you sit there as a Yahoo.
Joy, you're starting to irritate me. You really are. You're starting to piss me off, as a matter of fact. I owned businesses before you were born. Now, I'll tell you what. Calm down. It's the Christmas season. You gotta chill. Jesus was a socialist. He wasn't even a democratic socialist. They didn't vote. They didn't have votes. You know, he was like he was more like a Stalin socialist. You know, he told his followers what to do. You know, this is what you do. If you want to meet my Father in heaven, this is what you do. Joy, chill. Have a nice Christmas. Adios. Oy.
The devil bowed his head because he knew that he'd been beat. And he laid that golden fiddle on the ground at Johnny's feet. Johnny said, devil, just come on back if you ever want to try again. Because I told you once, you son of a gun, I'm the best there's ever been. He played, found him out, run, boy, run. Devil's in the house of the rising sun. A chicken in the bread, better picking out dough. Granny, we
you don't fight no child, no.
You are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
Yeah.
It's like a boy.
Not really. Oh my God, we have another one? All right, here. John is in Clemson, South Carolina. Hi, John.
Hello.
Hey, John.
Hello, Mike.
Yes.
Good afternoon or evening, wherever you are.
Well, you're in South Carolina, so hell, it might be 3 in the afternoon over there right now.
That's close.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the way you try to challenge your callers and how you cut them off every time they.
I wasn't trying to challenge. You're referring to Joy, of course. I wasn't trying to challenge her at all. I was trying to get a goddamn word in edgewise.
If you're listening on this end of it, that's not the way it sounded.
Oh well, I don't know what to say. I put you on hold, John, because I just got a feeling you're going to wind up like Crazy Joy did. Why have you called the program? Do you have something important to say, or did you just call up to bitch and complain?
I called to bitch and complain.
Okay, well, take it somewhere else. Goodbye. Go talk to your wife. I'm not married to you.
I'm sorry.
Lord, what was that? Was that one of your monsters? That was his wife? Oh, that was my wife. Okay, never mind. Bob is in Tennessee. Hey, Bob.
Boo, Mike. Happy Halloween.
Thank you.
Hey, I think, you know, that may have been one of the best greetings you've done, at least in the last 5 years of the Telltale Heart. That was dynamite.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
And the sound effects. Too, were great.
Well, that's thanks to Miss Kathy.
I've been thinking about something for a long time, Mike, that for Halloween, that now that I'm 70 years old, I know I'm never going to get around to, so I'd like to give you the idea.
Okay.
Haunted houses. You know, they have a lot of haunted houses all around on campuses and as fundraisers and everything. You know, the traditional things with the ghosts that spring out of the closet and these things that go on, and I think that's all well and good. It kind of perpetuates that demon thing, but it's all in fun. It's traditional.
Yeah.
But if you have this house, and if you've gone to any of these, you know, you go from room to room.
Yeah.
Different things happen in different rooms.
Right.
If you had this house and you really wanted to touch people's real fears.
Yeah.
Maybe you would have them be in a room, get their hokey scare, and then all of a sudden have some Al-Qaeda terrorists take over the room as if they're running from the cops or something, and freak them out with their guns and whatever. Or maybe a gang fight would occur in one of the rooms, and you could change it from maybe a dirty bomb alert, and everybody would be quarantined or something.
Or just have a Dick Cheney effigy in one room eating a Christian baby.
Oh, these things that really, you know, a suicide bomber shows up.
Yeah.
And being very unexpected, because the three or four rooms that they had been in prior to that had been the traditional haunted
right.
house, what their expectation was.
Right, right.
This would be an eruption that was just out of the blue. Maybe an FBI arrest. Would come in and they would,
like a dope bust.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
All the real fears that people have that would, I think, maybe expose themselves to themselves.
Uh-huh. That's it. No, I like it. I like it. I you know, maybe an effigy of George W. Bush hanging upside down.
You know, well, that's a little too humorous.
Well, that is. Yeah, that wouldn't work. That wouldn't work. No.
That's scary enough.
Yeah.
That's more like wish fulfillment than fear.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
Have a happy Halloween.
All right. Thanks, Bob. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I like that idea. You know, I would, my haunted house, though, that if I were going to do that, it would be I would have Irving Libby in one room and Piyush Jindal in the next. And who's that crazy bitch from Minnesota? Bachman. Bachman, the one that wants to open up her blood and stop Obama from... and this, yeah, something about health care. Just get all these psychopaths together. This ghoul Cheney and, you know, half the people that worked in, and I say half because the other half were just civil service, but half the people that worked in the Cheney Defense Department and the Justice Department, get Gonzalez gnawing on the leg of a detainee, you know? I mean, whew. All right, when we come back after this break, we're going to make another attempt at podcast trivia. We'd like to give away another free subscription to Molloy Show Downloads, commercial free. And it has a retail value of, let me see here, oh yes, $59.40. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy.
Truckers.
The only thing scarier to Neocons is a special prosecutor. It's more like Molloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, podcast trivia time. Have you got the podcast trivia music? You know, not the syncopated clock, but the other one. You can't find it? Okay, let's go to John in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. Are you ready to do podcast trivia?
Yes, I am.
Okay. You know how it works. I'll ask the question. It's multiple choice. If you get the right answer, we shall award you with a one-year gift subscription to the program, podcast. Here you go. What was the name of the book George W. Bush allegedly authored? Was it A, What I Learned in Vietnam, B, A Charge to Keep, C, Wanted, Dead or Alive, or D, A Discharge to Keep Secret?
I believe it was A Charge to Keep Secret.
I believe you're right. All right, way to go, John.
Thank you.
All right, stay on the phone. Kathy will come on and get the pertinent information, and congratulations.
Okay, yeah. Thanks.
All right, sir. A Discharge to Keep Secret? Are you serious? Oh, my God.
Charge to keep, discharge to keep secret.
Yeah, radio.
That should have been the coda or what we call it, the subtitle.
And radio producer losing it tonight. Okay, where are we? We're right here. Tim is in Detroit listening to XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. Regarding today's Homeland Security bill, actually, you know, the president, I think this is true. He actually signed it. And those 21 photos apparently don't have to be released.
Right.
And, you know, we've seen now many examples of President Obama, and I'm not talking about the Republican criticisms because they're completely
right
off base and a pack of wax and liars, but the progressive policies simply aren't there. I mean, we see it in terms of the bailout of the banks. We see it in terms of holding back torture photos. We see it in terms of escalation of troops in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And but the president doing all these things, it seems he's just bolstering the military-industrial complex. So what is the great progress that we've made?
I don't know.
It's very disheartening. You know?
It is indeed. If Barack Obama is incapable of doing those things that the progressive left or the liberal left or whatever it's called these days, if he's incapable of doing those things, then I've come to the conclusion, and I think a lot of people are coming to the same conclusion, that no one can do it. And that, in fact, this country is going to slide from being a democratic republic into being a democratic dictatorship, if that's not a contradiction in terms. We will still have our rather pointless elections, but fewer and fewer people will continue to, you know, truck out to the polls and vote. And it really won't matter a whole lot anyway. As Stalin famously said, anybody can vote. What's important is who counts the votes. And, boy, is that the truth in the United States since 2008.
Well, what's highly troubling to me is this increasing privatization that's been going on for the last 20
years. Well, sure, yeah.
You know, one of your callers was somehow trying to combine Christ with capitalism. And
yeah.
I mean, she missed the part where you can't serve two masters, money and God.
Right.
Not that it matters to these people, but... you know, there is a moral issue here. I mean, if you privatize anything and there's no accountability, that is ultimately going to lead to totalitarianism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think, I don't know how long, are you native born or are you an immigrant?
I'm an immigrant.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for 39 years.
Okay.
I guess I never lost the accent for whatever reason.
Well, no, I'm just saying you've been here long enough then. As I have, I was born here, but we have been here long enough to have seen this change that's come over this country. I think probably when you first came here, you might have come for the same reason that my grandfather came here from Italy, and that was for a better life, however you want to interpret that.
When I came here, the Papadopoulos regime had been installed by the CIA over in Greece.
Well, there you go.
So we're fully aware of the American hand around the world.
Right. But you came here for a better life, even though there was nastiness being perpetrated around the globe. The nastiness really hadn't taken root here yet. There was an attempt. We had McCarthy. We had the crazy people around Kennedy, Jack Kennedy. We had, there's always been an attempt to make this country fascistic. But it always didn't quite make it. And I think... you and I have seen that, and I think anybody who's been in this country, either as a native-born or a foreign-born, whatever, if you've been here 35, 40 years, you've seen the change.
Everything is privatized. I mean, a lot of the water now is being privatized.
That's right.
Usually, unless we privatize the water, that's going to lead to some incredible consequences.
It is, Tim. And I think I think what we're seeing is the literal ending of the kind of government that we've had in this country. And Tim, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. I don't doubt for a minute that is what's happening. I take stock internally. I take internal stock every now and again to see, well, how do you feel about this? I mean, you just seem you seem kind of passive or resigned to it. This ending of representative democracy or democratic government, whatever we've had or whatever we've thought we've had, there is no illusion anymore. I mean the Congress doesn't even pretend that it responds to the people. The executive branch doesn't even pretend that it's there to serve the needs of the people, even though some of the rhetoric is still there. But you know, our military doesn't even pretend that it's off serving or protecting America. Now, not the people who make the command decisions. They are now serving their corporate masters. So I try to find, just for my own, not peace of mind, but just calm down a little bit, I try to find one area, the privatization of education in this country, the destruction of public education. It's destroyed Because so much of it depends on real estate taxes, you know, property values. Real estate tax is usually what funds public schooling. It doesn't come in the form of tax, you know, tax money that's collected on a federal level and redistributed among the states. It doesn't come that way at all. I know. There's some of the money comes from the federal government, but for the most part, it's local school districts and the taxes. And I have watched over the years, I'm sure you have too, the unending procession of no votes to increase millage rates so that schools would have current textbooks and proper lab equipment and reduce the teacher-pupil ratio and, you know, off a school supplies. How many schools do you are you aware of where the PTA will make a plea right before the school year begins or after it begins, you know, for parents to go buy pencils and three ring notebooks and all that tangential equipment that you need or supplies, I should say, that you need to teach kids. So it's just like Christoph's column that I shared the first hour. Instead of sending soldiers and death and destruction and maiming and blood and guts and gore to Afghanistan, if we really want to defeat these religious psychopaths, which is, you know, why we're there, so we can, you know, have access to the oil or the natural gas or the pipeline route or whatever the hell it is. If we really want to do that, there's a benign way to steal everything. We used to do it a little bit more benignly, at least out in public. Yeah, we still would destabilize, assassinate, and overthrow. But there's no secrets about it anymore. If we really wanted to make an impression on Afghanistan, send in teachers, send in people to construct roads. I don't mean the Kellogg-Briner route or Halliburton or these filthy, goddamned, predatory, stinking, rotten, corpse-eating corporations. I don't mean them. I mean real companies that will really want to do some nation building. But, you know, even the terms, all the terms are bogus now. They're inoperative. When we talk about nation building, give me a break. We're not there. You don't send in the military with bombs and guns and bullets and tanks and howitzers and cannons to nation build. You send that stuff in to nation destroy. But language has been so corrupted that, you know, we just sit back and go, yeah, well, I think Barack Obama is trying to stabilize and bring democracy and freedom to Afghanistan, which is nonsense. It's just utter nonsense. It's insane to even think that that's what's going on. You know, what are you going to believe, your lying eyes or what, you know, Barack Obama says or George Bush says or Fox News Channel? Yeah, you understand what I'm saying? So anyway, it might not be too difficult if you're not a targeted group to live under fascism, you think? It's 10 before the hour. The credits all belong to Kay Petrini and Bruce Enberg and Sharon Gordy and Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf and Ben Birch and Kathy Bay. Back to your phone calls. Faisal is calling from Edmonton, Alberta. Hey, Faisal.
What is Alberta. You know it. How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right.
Hey, you know what? And we, you know what? Even I have relatives in Toledo, Ohio, for God's sake.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. Sylvania, Ohio. My mom's got two brothers who live there.
I'll be darned. That was a stone's throw from my sister's house.
You're still a legend there, Mike.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, listen, I listen to you a lot, and I just thought I felt compelled to phone in tonight when we were always talking about change and lack of it.
Uh-huh.
I know from a Muslim perspective or an Arab world perspective, traveling there and being in that type of community.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. You know that Toledo has a large Arab community too, right?
Oh, yeah. A lot of Lebanese folks.
I'm
real aware of that.
That's what I am. Yeah. Anyway, never from the first mention of Obama was there any hint of actual thinking that there's going to be a huge change, because they just feel in that part of the world that the corruption is so far embedded and that Democrats and Republicans, for example, or world leaders such as Bush, Hosni Mubarak, or Abdullah, they're all in cahoots so much that really this is just a screenplay contrived for people to watch. I don't know if you look at it that way. I don't know if that's your feeling, but I think just everybody thinks the fix is in.
Well, I guess I do. There's a part of me that does think that, Faisal, that this whole thing is kind of a cosmic joke that the people in power perpetrate against the people who are not in power. But I try to understand then why I and millions of other people have struggled, well, forever, but let's just keep it focused on the past, say, 50 years. We've struggled, to some sort of justice or truth, and you can't have one without the other. I don't know which one comes first and which one follows, but justice and truth, no matter what the issue is, and nobody, you're right, it doesn't make any difference. The leaders, I don't care if they're Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, they're all liars. And they all perpetrate a status quo that continues to kill people. It kills people with bombs. It kills people with poverty. It kills people with illiteracy. It kills people with disease. You know, I don't get this, man. I do not get this. I would think that after all the time that humans have had on this earth, all the philosophers, whether they have been co-opted by religions or not, is immaterial. All the philosophers who've been around who have said, look, you've got to stop this. You've got to conduct yourself in a manner that's respectful and peaceful. We don't do it. What the hell is it going to take?
You know it's going to take, but you can't say it sometimes in public because it seems. But I find a lot of young guys walking around these days that are far more informed than the same age, than the people that were age about 20 years ago. There are critical thinkers out there. It's just that you can't see them on mainline TV, of course, because corporate media is itself too far corrupted and
I'm sure they're out there, but where are they having an effect? It's not having an effect, a noticeable effect that I can see in this country. I can't speak for the UK or Saudi Arabia or Japan. I just know here the thinkers, the philosophers are not having an effect that's visible. Maybe there's something going on off screen that we're not aware of. I don't know, but it's getting rough. It's getting rough to keep the faith, you know?
It is. And listen, Mike, I just want to say I talked to you a couple times when you were on that other network. You know the one, AA?
Air America? You can say it. You can say Air America.
You know what I'm saying. I mean, that was a nice loaded cast. I remember when that first came on. It was such a pleasure to hear all of you, from Sam Cedar to Garofalo to Randy, to yourself. And again, it's a pleasure to talk to you, sir, and I hope I get a chance again.
Well, thanks, Faisal. I appreciate it. Kind words indeed. Thank you very much. Take care. we almost did it. Some of the people on Air America, I had my differences with, for sure. one in particular whose initials are Al Franken, but still, there was a moment there when I honestly believed, had Air America not been organized by thieves, liars, sneaks, and weaklings, I didn't know that because, you know, I wasn't based in New York. Everybody else was based in New York, and I was doing the show out of Atlanta at the time. But there was a brief moment there where I thought, hey, you know, this is going to work. I stay in touch with Sam. I stay in touch with, well, Hartman wasn't part of that original group. I stay in touch with Janine. Let's see, who else? I guess that's about it, right, Kathy? Just Sam and Janine are the only ones that, well, Hartman wasn't part of the original cast and crew at Air America. Not that that means a damn thing, but I'm just talking about that original group where a lot of people thought, wow, what's this? Hey, thanks for hanging out this week. I'll see you Monday, all right? If we didn't get to your call, I apologize. Take care. Keep it lit. Well, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
This is the end. Beautiful friend. This is the end.